Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. To truly experience the culture of other countries, you really have to try what's on the menu. And on today's broadcast, we're talking about international cuisine. While we can't travel the world to sample them all, we can certainly get a taste of what's out there at many of the fine restaurants here in Hampton Roads. And today, we'll tell you about an event that brings together many of the great chefs of the area who are inspired by international cuisine. All that along with your delicious dish and this month's Test Kitchen Gadget Review after this news from NPR. Afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. Great to be with you today, and especially great to be touring the world today with my good friend Chef Patrick Evans Hilton, an award-winning food journalist, the James Beard Foundation Media Award judge, who has been working in the world of food in Hampton Roads and across the Commonwealth and around the world since 1995. He's the author of several books, including Dishing Up Virginia, and he is the expert editor at About.com's fish and seafood cooking site. Chef Patrick, good to see you today.
Hello. Excellent to see you.
I'm glad we're going around the world today.
Oh, it's exciting.
Kind of have this whole international theme and flair today.
Yes, and this event that we're going to be talking about, I am so excited.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Let's do it then. We've got our flavor profiles, a couple of great events coming up, lovely opportunities for people to go out and experience the great food that Hampton Roads has to offer.
Exactly. There's several really great things coming up. You know, one of them, they've done this for several years up in Williamsburg. It's the Williamsburg Area Restaurant Association Iron Chef Wine and Food Expo.
Ooh.
It's going to be coming up April the 12th, so not too long from now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot of fun. It's going to be at the Williamsburg Lodge. There's it's a classic Iron Chef style battle of some of the area chefs. And
nice.
It's just a lot of fun then with tasting and heavy hors d'oeuvres and wine. And you're up in Williamsburg, and who doesn't love Williamsburg?
Who doesn't love it? Exactly.
That's right.
So.
That's right.
And I'll tell you, very shortly now, the inn reopens. Is that right? The beautiful restaurant?
They're doing those renovations.
Yeah.
Yes, at Regency
Room. I can't wait.
Oh, gosh, I know. I love the feel of it anyway, and I know that they're going to stay true to that classic feel, but just bringing it a little bit more up to date, kind of like maybe giving the queen a makeover or something.
Yeah, there you go.
You know?
I tell you, but I'm between the chef that's there.
Oh, Travis is
and
awesome.
Travis
Bruss.
Bruss, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of the, and just the fact that it's just such a legacy place. I
exactly.
can't wait to see the redo.
Yes.
Cannot wait for it. Okay, so what else do we have going
Let's
on?
Let's see. Also, there's a couple of other things. This is always fun. I believe you've participated in the past, and I have too, the Celebrity Knife for Prevent Child Abuse.
Yes,
Hampton
absolutely,
Road.
Sure.
That's coming up. That's going to this month as well, the 32nd annual. So you can get on their website for more information. Also, Dining Out for Life is coming up.
And that Prevent Child Abuse website is PCAHR.org.
That's
PCAHR.
Right. And I should say it's April 3rd.
And I tell you, I love this opportunity. There are quite a number of restaurants participating from throughout the region. You can get the list. Well, it's not that long. We should probably tell people since they've been kind enough to do it. You got 456 Fish and Azalea Inn in Norfolk. You got Baker's Crust in Chesapeake.
Mm-hmm.
Cedar Point Country Club in Suffolk. Il Giardino in Virginia Beach and Roger Brown's in Portsmouth.
Exactly.
And what I love about this, I mean, you are experienced at this. I am not, but they pair up actual professional waiters with media people who do not know anything about waiting tables. And they're very kind to share their tips with the organization, in this case, Prevent Child Abuse Hampton Roads.
That's
And, you know, so you may be waited on by somebody that at the end of the meal you will conclude you wish never to be waited on again. But it'll be fun for you to meet some of these folks who bring you the news. And
I got very lucky the last time. One of my tables was Jane Gardner.
Oh, well, then you did get lucky.
She and Gary were in. And so it's fun because, you know, lots of people really do come out for the evening.
Yeah, I know. It is a load of fun. What else is coming up?
And also, not too long after that, April 24th, Dining Out for Life, which benefits Access AIDS. This is great because you support just by, again, just going out to a great restaurant in the area. I think they've got like 80 restaurants lined up. Last year, they raised $90,000 for Access AIDS. and you just go and show up. And these restaurants, they're so wonderful about giving a percentage of the sales that evening. Yeah. To benefit the clients and client services at XSAIDS.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, this idea of doing events around food, particularly fundraisers,
yes,
around food, is just huge these days. I mean, it's really amazing how many organizations are doing this.
Well, you know, food really is the next big entertainment thing, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, folks are well-versed, well-educated now after a decade plus of the Food Network and celebrity chefs. So people want to have new experiences around dining out. And what's also great, like in the case of the Sterling Supper Party, which we had back in February, for the benefit of WHRO, is that you get to really experience a lot of great different small bites,
yeah,
all in one place.
Absolutely.
And you know that your money also is going to be benefiting a good cause.
Indeed. So instead of doing the celebrity with the waiter, I just got finished doing a great event called the Culinary Clash, which was loads of fun. And I got paired up with a chef, mm-hmm, through the Culinary Institute, and it was just great fun. This
awesome.
Was on the peninsula, and just really it was a lot of fun. I don't do well with the cooking thing, so you know, so there we go.
Is it the hot pans, the sharp knives, or?
It's the sharp knives and it's the pressure,
yeah,
you know, really is what it is. So this was the Peninsula Culinary Clash on the 14th, and so we each got matched up with a chef, and then we cooked together for 2 hours trying to get something decent going on here. And then the guests that came to the event judged.
Okay.
And I'm not going to tell you how it turned out.
Film at 11?
Film at 11.
Okay.
Exactly so. So what else do we have going on in our flavor profiles?
Well, you know, and also just a little bit of a recap. Mocha had their awesome Wine by Design. Congratulations to some culinary winners there. It was a great evening. Again, raised money for an exhibit that's coming up out at the Virginia Museum of Contemporary Art. And what was really nice as you go out there, it was all a Rio theme.
Nice.
The Best in Show was Salt at the Point in Virginia Beach, a great little restaurant. They had a black bean sofrito with grilled octopus.
Wow.
I mean, and again, like, you know, like the tickets for this was, and I forgot exactly how much they were, 50, 60 bucks, mm-hmm, but you get all these incredible things. Best theme interpretation, Eurasia Cafe for a cocoa limb churrasco with polenta porridge, yuca chip, and coconut bubbles.
Now, you know what I think as I think about some of these events?
Mm-hmm.
These would be great first date events.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they would.
You know, it's a first date is always awkward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you want to do something that's fun, because if it's not going well, you know, you want to have something else going on, right?
That's right.
I just think a lot of these charity events that are related to food, these tasting events, would mm-hmm be a great first date. I'm just going to put that out
there. And it also would be really good, too, because then if it is going well, you can say, wow, you know, wasn't that artfully presented pâté or winter squash from Salacia, which won Best Plate Interpretation?
Yes.
Wasn't that wonderful? Would you like to go to Salacia
exactly
with me next Saturday night? Perfectly,
man.
Boom.
Boom.
Why didn't
done
they have these when we were growing up?
I'm telling you.
They did,
I would just like to say my life would have been a lot easier.
It would have been easier.
No, it would have been. But we always, and you know, that's the thing about this broadcast. We live to serve.
Yes,
we're
did.
We're not just about bringing you the great food stories.
It's not
we're
just
bringing
looking,
relationship developments
that's
as well.
Right. It's not just looking forward, it's looking back.
Yes, it
as
is.
As well.
Exactly.
So also Best Sweets to Shockley Sweet Shop. They do these incredible little thing called cannonballs that are, you know, bite-sized cake bites that's frosting encrusted. Oh. Should I say more?
No, I think not.
And Best Booth to the Gourmet Gang. They did a really cool tropical fruit and flora.
Fun. And so the other thing, Taste of Hampton Roads.
Taste of Hampton Roads was awesome. They had a VIP competition. Chef Scott Simpson, who I believe will be joining us shortly, he won for the secret ingredient was Lynn Haven oysters. Now get this. He did a Belmont peanut, and they're out in Southampton County. It was my favorite Virginia peanuts. Belmont peanut crusted oysters on Virginia seaweed salad made with wakame, which is the seaweed, local collards, and oyster brine, topped with a jossicle, which is an Edwards ham, smoked pepper Virginia ham, creme fraiche.
Yeah, I don't even know what you said, but it sounds delicious.
Sister, it was Smack Your Mama Good.
There you go.
And Menino's won People's Choice.
Well, that's not a surprise.
No, Menino's
is awesome. I
would
just have to say,
that is
not a surprise. How's it going with the About.com, where you are the fish and seafood cooking site expert?
Yeah, everything is going along really
great.
Good there. Posting lots of stuff coming along. And so.
And I know you've enjoyed getting to know our guest today, Cree LeFevre, who's the author of Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts. Good to have you with us today.
This is a beautiful book.
Yeah, great to be with you.
And so this is, I love the way this is organized. First of all, we both noted that the cover is very cushiony, which we kind of like just in general principle.
Yeah. The puffy cover.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the puffy cover too.
It really is nice. So so how did you decide to organize this? You've got 54 creative meal sets, but how did you decide and how did you wind up organizing the book?
Well, you know, the way I approached my first cookbook was about steak. It was about steak, and I wanted to create plates. And when you're cooking steak, of course, there's I'm sure there are 50 sauces, but to me, almost when I was cooking a steak, for example, I was thinking more of what I wanted to sort of eat around and with it. You know, the way we think of sort of classic accompaniments for steak.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of how I got launched doing this, and then I followed that same model. It's also in my second cookbook, which is about chicken, called Poulet. It's partly also because I think of my plate as an integrated whole, which I think we all pretty much do. Like, we don't want a taco alongside a French gratin. So I guess I think that some people aren't really super comfortable trying to put together a balanced plate, and so it felt like a good way to do it.
It's really interesting. And as well, we should note, when it comes to fish, of course, there is a lot of people's sensitivity has been significantly raised about sustainability issues with fish. And you've really, it looks like, put a great effort into producing a cookbook that supports the sustainability of seafood.
Yeah. When I took on this project, I really didn't feel good about writing another cookbook that was going to call for eel or Chilean sea bass or whatever the latest fish that's been pretty much eaten to extinction. So I just said I'm not gonna do the song and dance at the beginning and then call for it, which I think sometimes cookbooks can fall into, fish cookbooks. Like, you know, we say, oh, well, don't eat this and don't eat that and this is over fish. And then call for it in a recipe. So I just decided not to do that. I'm only calling for fish that, I use mostly Monterey Seafood Fish Watch as my guide, along with some other information.
Interesting.
And I just really, I really stuck to those sustainable species.
And so you have organized this in a lot of respects in context of our theme today, globally, with American, European, South Asian, East Asian, Middle Eastern, and African selections. And so in the American section, you know, we will admit to being a little bit arrogant about this, but we really do feel that our region in the Mid-Atlantic has fabulous seafood options and opportunities. So did we make it into the book?
Well, you know, actually, I would say that the American section, oddly, you know, it's a very funny way that, you know, we have an American chapter because, of course, even though I have a South Asian and a Latin chapter, it's all American food.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the way we cook today. We're really global about the way we think about our ingredients. We have an incredible range of ingredients available to us. So really, it's thinking about traditions, in a sense. And so American chapter, actually, in many respects, although it's driven to some extent by California cuisine, it's also very largely driven by Southern cuisine. So, you know, which feels really, truly one of the most identifiable sources of the food culture.
Yeah.
So I'm not Southern. I have close friends who are from Mississippi, and you know, I love Southern food. You did make it in. If that answers your question,
that makes perfect sense. And you also have a shrimp and grits recipe, which I think is.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how you do a cookbook about fish without a shrimp and grits
exactly.
Recipe, you know.
But I think,
and honestly, I didn't know anything about shrimp and grits until I met my friends from Mississippi.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
I think my favorite section actually is the Middle Eastern section, because I think that you do see so many recipes that are classic American, Southern regional. You do see a lot of European applications, plenty of Asian applications, but it seems like as a whole, when you do think of Middle Eastern food, seafood's not always one of the first things that comes to mind either.
I mean, Middle Eastern food is, I think, pretty hot right now. There's some really, obviously, some wonderful, very popular cookbooks out that are in that tradition. So the Middle Eastern component really feels very natural to me with fish.
Sure.
The African part of this, I mean, again, it starts coming around. I mean, we're thinking about sort of Southern traditions and then African traditions, and then, you know, every single chapter has a sort of, you know, it sort of blends into the next in many respects in terms of the ingredients. Like, for example, you're going to find lots of collards in an African recipe here, because that is, again, you know, it's sort of cross-pollinating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to think about these flavors and essentially the ingredients and the basic sort of grains. Or, you know, if you think about different food traditions, we often think about, well, who's eating rice? Who's eating millet? Who's
right.
eating, you know, wheat? You know, who's having bread as opposed to? So that, some of that stuff creeps in here. And I think I love exploring different grains. And and I think that they're widely available now. So if we want to have millet, or we want to have, you know, kasha or some other, I mean, quinoa is like taking over the world. So.
That's true. Yep. That's true. Yep. And I didn't even hear of that until a couple of years ago. Well, Creela Favor, thank you so much for being with us. It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
The
photography is spectacular by Antonis Akelios. It's Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts by Creela Favor, LAFAVOUR. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that new book is absolutely beautiful. It really is. Gorgeous photography and gorgeous recipes. I see that you're going to be taking that home with you, aren't you?
You know, I did bring an oversized bag here. But, you know, one thing I really like, too, is at the introduction of each chapter, it gives you an overview, too. So, like, I'm looking here at East Asian, some drinks that might be common, you know, to serve with it. How to set a table, maybe some sweets to end everything up.
Yeah. We're at about 23 minutes past the hour. Have you seen the new Muppets movie?
I have not, but it is on my radar.
Okay, very good. It just came out, and it's called Muppets Most Wanted. And so as we think about this idea of world cuisine,
yes,
Danny Epperson, I think, clearly has too much time on his hands.
Well,
because he was able to, this is what I like about Danny as a producer. You always know a show is produced by Danny Epperson because it will have some sort of popular culture element in it that's going to happen.
Yes.
And so today, our popular culture element is from the Swedish Chef. And the new Muppets movie called Muppets Most Wanted, just out in theaters now.
Yes.
Oh, we're big fans of the Muppets. What are you going to do?
You know, they're classic.
They're timeless. Classic and timeless. Exactly. So we're celebrating international cuisine today, and we'll talk with Janice Weisberg, who's the immediate past president of the Norfolk Sister Cities Association. And she's also co-chair of this event coming up on Thursday, April 3rd, called The Passport to Norfolk Sister Cities. Janice Weisberg, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you for asking me to join you. This is very exciting. I'm very nervous. We're 1 week out from the event. So.
Wow.
Here we are.
Well, let me definitely give people the website where they can get more information. It's passportnorfolk.com. And this is a celebrity chef cuisine International Entertainment Exotic Bazaar. Man, that is a lot for $50 a person. Not going to lie.
It sure is. This is just going to astound everyone. They're going to come away globally expanded after this event and learn something about all of Norfolk's 10 sister city relationships. So,
and tell
we're
us
very excited.
Tell us about that whole sister city concept. And I'm glad you said there are 10 sister city experiences, because I had in mind that there was one, and then I heard somebody say, well, our sister city, and then I heard somebody say another one. I thought, something's going on here, because it sounds like more than one.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the sister city concept has been around for a long time. It was established under President Eisenhower's term as president in 1956. With the idea of bringing citizen diplomats together and kind of bringing people together to make peace through people. So local cities were to twin with international cities, and long-term partnerships were established based on friendship, and all kinds of partnerships from education, cultural, business, medicine, anything. But we've learned that through these partnerships, friendships have developed and businesses can thrive. So we have 10 now.
Which is fantastic. Now tell us, so we'll have all those 10 cities, it sounds like, represented at the Passport event on April 3rd at the Sheraton Norfolk Waterside Hotel.
Absolutely. We will have all 10. Actually, truthfully, legally, we have 9 real sister cities and 1 friendship city, our newest city in China, Ningbo, China.
Okay.
But
I don't think I'm going
to
hold you to that. I do not think that we have the law enforcement authorities coming in on that. So.
Okay. Well, Patrick has been absolutely wonderful helping us to connect us to area restaurants and chefs who will be producing cuisine inspired by our sister city countries.
That's fantastic. And so who's confirmed in terms of chefs and that sort of thing?
Well, Patrick, do you want to go through it, or do you want me to go through it?
Sure. Well, we've got a list, a great list here. And so just talking about the country as a whole, Canada is Chef Todd Jurek, and Todd's going to be doing a mushroom soil, sea beans, unagi tamayaki, and mustard oil, which is inspired by the romantic rocky cliffs of Nova Scotia and some of the seafood that's there. China is Chef Vincent Lamonte from Press 626, and he is doing a dragon well green tea shrimp. Then from England, Norfolk is the sister city over there, Norfolk County. Chef Jerry Bryan from Coastal Grill is going to be doing a traditional bangers and mash.
Absolutely.
Which, that's really, it really sounds awesome. France is Chef Steve Ida from the City Dock Restaurant down at the Sheraton Norfolk Waterside, where the event's going to be taking place. He's doing a seared sea bass, vanilla beurre blanc, and asparagus risotto. And then Germany is Chef Bobby Huber. He's going to be doing a rolladen with potato balls. So that's a meat roulade stuffed with things like pickles and onions and grainy mustard and rolled up and cooked and then served with the potato balls on the side. Ghana, Chef Mike Farrell is going to be doing a crab, tilapia, and okra stew over basmati rice with crispy plantain chips, ground nuts, and sweet potato mousse. India is Chef Amrit Arora from
Nawab.
Yep. Seafood Curla Curry. Japan, Chef Jesse Weichel from Eurasia, an orange miso cured duck taki, pickled spring vegetables, mango crispies, and soy bubbles. And then the Philippines, Chef Leon Buyeveje from CP Shuckers, a spicy pork adobo tacos, pineapple slaw, crumbled cheese, and scallions. Russia, Chef Scott Simpson, he's going to be doing a cured sturgeon with root vegetable salad. He's from the Swan Terrace. And then, of course, Kathy, we can't leave Virginia out. You know,
please do.
We know we love Virginia, so we're going to have a Virginia by land and a Virginia by sea.
Nice.
So Chef Gerald Cox from Smalls is going to be doing a Virginia smoked hand-pulled pork barbecue with a pear cranberry compote. And then
that sounds delicious.
Hold on to your seat here, sister,
because
the last and certainly not least is Virginia by the Sea. Chef Scott Dickinson from the Green Onion is going to be doing 2 items, a butter poached sea scallop, hash of apple, sweet potato, and Virginia ham, and then a crab cake with green onion aioli and succotash.
Oh.
So Janice, tell us about how much, you know, all of this is going to cost and everything for the evening.
This is amazing. It's just a mere $50 a person.
Oh, come on.
You're just crazy.
Come on. Now you're just talking crazy.
You're going to be grazing and having these wonderful, delectable taste of the world, basically. And also you're going to be entertained by performers that are going to bring the spirit of the different countries to you. And, of course, the Bazaar of International Goods for Sale, which is going to be just colorful and exciting. And you can have your picture taken in your favorite sister city through the magic of green screen.
Nice. Oh, cool. Well done. Well, it sounds like a fantastic event. And then, again, that is coming up Thursday, April 3rd from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Exactly.
And it's going to be at the Norfolk, the Sheraton Norfolk Waterside, the Sheraton Norfolk Waterside. And the website for more information is passportnorfolk.com. And this is essentially a great celebration of the sister cities' relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And you have to have your passport to enter. I'm telling you, we're doing this right. You will bring your passport, you'll get pages, and you'll go through each city and be stamped.
All right.
It's going to be
hands-on
fun.
Now, you know, Patrick, this would also be, continuing our conversation of earlier, this would also be a great first date event.
Yes,
because
it
it's going to be loads of fun. You're going to be able to get photographic evidence of said first date. And that'll be good in case, you know, I would suggest, though, sometimes, you know, your date gets a little creeped out if you put the picture on your desk as if it's a wedding photo away. So I just want to back you off of that.
I also wouldn't be saying, you know, Russia would be a great place for our honeymoon
your first date. Exactly. So that would not be a helpful state, if a helpful thing at all. You know, we should do a show on relationship advice because I do feel that we've got already
a sister.
In just this few bits of moments, we have delivered some true blue
advice.
We could
call it dates and dates. So dates, food, and date the relationship.
It's a little bit too much creativity in 1 hour for me, but I love it. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us and for
you,
all
Janice.
Your work on this, Janice Weisberg. It's a lot of work to do, and I appreciate you being with us.
It's wonderful, and thank you so much for sharing it with everyone.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Norfolk Sister Cities organization, you can do that at Norfolk Sitter. NorfolkSisterCities.org. But if you want to know specifically about this big event, the Passport to Norfolk Sister Cities, coming up Thursday, April 3rd at 5:30 at the Sheraton Norfolk Waterside Hotel, then that is PassportNorfolk.com.
And I might also say that I've interviewed all 12 of the chefs, the 10 Sister Cities, then the two Virginia represented chefs, to get kind of their take on each dish and also how they were inspired by it. And those are going to be blog entries on the WHRO blog, Let's Eat. So if you go to whro.org/Let's Eat, you'll find the backstory.
All right. Very good. We're glad to have Chef Scott Simpson with us today from the Swan Terrace Grill at the Founders Inn and Spa. Chef Scott, good to talk with you today. Thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure always to be here, and I'm so glad to talk to Patrick as well.
Hey, how's it going?
And you're creating for this particular event a dish from Russia, which we have thusly described. And I understand that you have studied international cuisine overseas quite extensively.
Yes, this is one of the better benefits of being a chef. Knives will try luxury. And so the companies and positions I've held within Capella have allowed me to see a lot of the world and get very familiar with firsthand with international cuisine. And it was quite intentional, actually, my travels. But yes, I'm really excited about this opportunity to kind of showcase a lot of what I know.
Ah, that's really nice. And so as you think about culinarily what goes on around the world, what are we missing here in the region in terms of international cuisine? We've had a lot of requests on this broadcast. Mm-hmm. The reason I raise the question, we've had a lot of requests on this broadcast for Ethiopian food.
Ethiopian in particular, yeah.
Yeah. But are there any other deficits that you see in the region in that regard?
Well, I mean, personally, I know there's a lot of Mexican food here, but I would like to see some very regional Mexican cuisine.
Ah.
I know that we have quite a bit of small
Caribbean restaurants, but I worked in Jamaica for quite a long time, and I just returned from opening our newest Capella Hotel in St. Lucia. And I know that there's a lot to be done with Caribbean flavors, mm-hmm. And it's something that's quite overlooked. You know, so those are two that I think of, you know, right away that would be here. And the other thing is I was fortunate to open up a hotel in Ecuador, and I worked in South America for quite a while, and about 3 years. And I know that, Patrick, you would remember this. We did that event.
Yes,
down
the
there.
OPSAIL, Best Events OPSAIL.
And I got so much enthusiastic response from working with that Ecuadorian ship, mm-hmm. and preparing the food down there. And a lot of people were very interested in what we were doing there. So I
yes.
think that's another.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned on the previous interview, you were talking about quinoa being, that's an Andean food that comes from Ecuador. You know,
really?
Oh, yes.
That is fascinating. I love these international events, by the way, that bring so much to our region. And of course, coming up, speaking of international events, we have NATO Fest coming
exactly.
up very, very soon, which is going to be fantastic. It used to be called the Azalea Festival, and while it is certainly true that azaleas are still key and central to the process, there's so much more to the Azalea Festival, to NATO Fest, and that's going to be happening later in April, the weekend of the 25th and 26th and 27th.
So just a couple of weeks?
Just a couple of weeks away, and it's going to be a great event. Lots of scholarship opportunities for young people as well, so that'll be a lovely event indeed. But this area is so internationally focused,
yes.
not just because of our military, but because of the number of businesses that we have here that have headquarters overseas and local offices mm-hmm. here. So that's too a piece of, I think, what brings some of the cuisine here.
And again, just a really much more sophisticated palate as a whole. I think Scott is right that there, you know, you can say Mexican food, but there are so many regions to explore, you know, the Chiapas, the Baja. I mean, there's so many different
yes.
things.
You know, it's interesting because I have heard people talk about a variety of different cuisines. For instance, Luna Maya.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people say, you know, that Mexican restaurant, Luna Maya, and it's really Bolivian.
It's Bolivian, yes.
Which is kind of, I mean, and if you go there, you could see some pretty fundamental differences. I mean, there are certainly some similarities,
sure.
tortillas and that sort of thing, but quite a lot of differences as well. Well, this is going to be a great event coming up, and we're so glad to have you with us today, Chef Scott Simpson.
Yes.
From Swan Terrace, and you can learn more at foundersinn.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to the event, and I hope everyone comes out and tries the sturgeon specialty I'm going to be preparing. I think it's going to be very unique, and there's a lot of connection behind the
yes.
selection.
Great. Well, thanks again for being with us. And Chef Patrick, describe that dish for us again,
well,
if you
it's
will.
It's a cured sturgeon, and then with a root vegetable salad. And what Scott's Ooh. Alluding to is when Christopher Newport first arrived here in 1607, sturgeon was so abundant mm. in the waters here. They really fished a lot of sturgeon, and it's coming back.
What does it taste like?
It's a very firm, mildish white fish. If you want to say it's somewhat reminiscent of a swordfish, although I think the texture is just slightly mm-hmm. different, but really, really nice. And I'm sure that the curing that Scott's going to be applying to this, the curing method, is really going to accent it a
yeah.
lot, too.
Mm, sounds delicious. You know, I've become such a fan of salmon. And there's so many different ways to prepare that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, I went to a new restaurant the other night that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Luce downtown on
Granby
Street. Oh,
gosh, I know. Remember I talked to you about
Indeed.
That the last one. Isn't it awesome?
It really was. We went, I guess, about a week or so ago. It's very small. It's smaller
yes.
than I expected it
yes.
to be. So most of the tables are those sort of sit up. And I'm not
yeah,
wild about that.
I
got to be honest with
I know.
You.
I know.
As a short person, I'm not wild about
yeah.
those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what
Maybe
it is.
If they had like a bouncer to kind of help lift you up
like
and
a
put
booster
you there.
Cha- booster thing or something. I don't know. But that's just, I mean, it's
a small,
it's a very minor point in the scheme of things. There's a lovely little bar there.
Yeah.
And, but the food was delicious.
Oh,
Italian.
Man. Yes, yes, yes.
And so they've had a bit of a controversy over the sign out front.
Mm.
I don't know. Has that been resolved? Do you know?
I think that they ended up paying a small fine to the city, and the city's letting them keep it as
okay. All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you never know what's going to trip you up on this kind of thing. But I have to say, the food was just delicious.
And it's such a nice atmosphere.
Very
nice.
It just felt
good inside.
Yeah. I had a... like a crostini thing with mushrooms, a wide variety of mushrooms on it, which was excellent. And I thought the wait staff was quite good.
Yes, yes.
They also seemed very knowledgeable about the menu.
Nice little wine list.
Yes.
Yep.
I really do not enjoy a restaurant where the wait staff does not thoroughly know the menu.
That's right.
And I personally, I have no problem, because I always ask them this all the time. I say, well, if you were, what would you have?
Mm-hmm,
you know, if you were looking
mm-hmm.
for a chicken dish, which one? Because I figure they've seen a lot of them come
sure,
out.
Sure, yeah.
They've seen what goes back, eaten and not eaten, and they've had mm-hmm. to hear about it from patrons. Mm-hmm. So I think they're in an excellent position to know.
And plus, you know, sometimes you have a question like, how is that salmon prepared? Or, you know, what type of sauce, you know, is that? And again, you're looking to them to help guide you, to shepherd you to making the right decision
right.
for your meal.
You know, and so many restaurants now, it's just an observation, have to be mindful of people's sensitivities and allergies.
Yes.
And I'm imagining that that's a big challenge for restaurants these days.
It is, especially when somebody just shows up and doesn't give them forethought.
What a great point.
So many restaurants are very willing to accommodate, you know, because they want patrons to come in and to enjoy themselves, especially with their family and friends that may not have any sensitivities towards something else. But give them plenty of notice.
Mm-hmm.
Give them plenty of notice. If you do show up, you know, I'm sure they're still going to try to accommodate, but it may not be it may not be their best effort.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So just make sure that they know. In addition, the other thing I noticed I was in a restaurant recently where somebody came in a wheelchair and that's another thing
yes.
where I thought it was like a very small, tight restaurant. I thought, wow, you know, and it was not just somebody in a wheelchair. There was
mm-hmm.
some other needs associated with it. And I, you know.
Well, so many of our buildings, especially in
older Nauta, buildings,
are grandparented
yes.
in from the ADA.
Yes.
And it is a situation. I've had several people ask
You've
me before,
it too.
Before I go there, can you tell me, am I going to be able to get into the bathroom?
Right.
Just
right.
simply to wash my hands, you
yeah.
know. Kind of thing. And I don't think you see so much of that in cities like Virginia Beach or Chesapeake in particular, because there are a lot of newer build outs and so
yes.
they're ADA compliant. But and you can't blame the restaurants because some of the buildings can't be changed or adapted.
Sure, of course.
Know.
And so but the idea there again is if you are going to a place that's in an old building, you might
just
want to
do
just
a little
call
research.
And check.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us about this month's soundbite. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is really great. You know, a lot of people are very shy about eating oysters out of the R month, which is really just an old wives' tale. But, you know, we're right on the cusp of April, so I thought it'd be fun to talk to Chef Leon.
So, wait a minute, you're supposed to eat them in an R month or not supposed to?
You are supposed to eat them in R month.
Okay.
So for a couple of months, primarily the summer, where there's not an R in the month, supposedly they're off, you know, out of bounds for you.
Okay. So, they're out of bounds for me every day, but here we go.
All right, well, we are back with another soundbite, and we are actually here at History Bites at the Mariners Museum in Newport News. This is a really great food tasting event to honor the Battle of Hampton Roads. And I'm here with Chef Leon Buenvieje from CP Shuckers. And we know, Leon, that you know, we're going into the April month, which has an R in it, and a lot of people just will not eat oysters unless it has an R in the month. And
mm-hmm.
so I can imagine that among all of the wonderful food that you do at CP Shuckers, that you see a lot of oysters over there, not just to shuck them and serve them raw. Yes, I would imagine so. But in some of your beautiful dishes, too. So, Leon, walk us through. We have a beautiful Lynn Haven oyster, you know, right here cupped in your hand. And just tell us what folks need to do to get that open.
First off, you put it on a bar towel. You look for the little split in the valve. Take your knife, and it's all in your wrist movement.
Yes.
So some people put their elbow or their shoulder into it, and it looks so painful. But it's all in the wrist movement. Just normally a little couple twists and it'll pop open. Now if it's a stubborn one, like if I had a box of 100, I just sort them out, the ones that look easier to go ahead and break first, and then I'll go ahead and just put it in my hand, just pop, 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 and it's good. But some of the cumbersome ones, the tighter ones, I'll either break off a lip with a set of pliers, or I'll take my torch and I'll give it just a little bit of heat to it to open up just a little bit, and I'll pop it off that way.
And it's also important to hold that cup side down, too, for a number of reasons, right? It gives you a little bit better traction.
Right.
And then you don't want those juices to fall out either.
Right, right. You want to keep all those juices. I've seen people also be really... able to, if you put it on a flat surface, like it's say a table, you could probably bust open like 30 in like 6 seconds. I mean, if you're just lined them up and just popped them open, it's beautiful. We had to do it one time for a guy that wanted 600 oysters.
Wow.
And I think CP Shuckers has some of the fastest oyster shuckers around.
So if you're going to be having a end of the R month party, that would be a good way to kind of line those up and to do them or something like that.
Yes, of course.
So now, what's your favorite way of eating an oyster?
Raw.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
I like them baked, I like them fried, but raw is definitely the weapon of choice.
Yeah, do you like a little cocktail? Do you like a little horseradish, a little butter? What do you like?
It just depends on the moment, really, and what I'm drinking, really. So sometimes I like a little mignonette. Sometimes I just want a little vinegar and some chili. Sometimes I'll just shoot it and chase it with a beer.
That all sounds good. Well, happy April, our end of the R month coming up to you. And thank you so much, Chef Leon.
Thank you.
I am glad that you sound better, though, than you did in that. You sounded like you were really struggling. I remember
sinuses.
That.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that was nice. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, from our Facebook page, Erica writes, Crocs on 19th Street, Bistro Crocs, 19th Street, Virginia Beach, is my favorite restaurant in the region for authentic Lebanese cuisine.
Yes.
Not commonly found in the area. Their offerings are always exceptionally fresh and delicious. They have recently expanded the Lebanese offerings to include items for people who eat gluten-free, vegetarian, or vegan. And of course, they always offer that fresh local American cuisine, which is nice if you're in a group that wants something else. For Italian, Erica writes, Suffolk has a wonderful gem in Al Forno Pizzeria. While they do offer a wide variety of pizzas, they also have other classic Italian American dishes and unique regional specialties from the owner's home city of Palermo.
Palermo.
So, yeah, nicely done, huh? So I don't know that we have time for America's Test Kitchen today. We do? Let's hit America's Test Kitchen.
Today in the test kitchen, we're going to look at 8-inch chef's knives. Now, we have tested chef's knives many, many times over the past 20 years. We've looked at dozens and dozens of knives. We've looked at traditional ones, innovative ones, hybrid ones that combine Eastern and Western features. And at the end of every one of these tests, we have kept telling the same story. There's one bargain knife that costs less than $30. It takes our top honors every single time. It's called the Victorinox Swiss Army Fibrox 8-inch Chef's Knife. And this thing beats knives that cost 10 times as much. But this is the test kitchen, so we decided there's no harm in checking back again and making sure there's not another knife out there that's even better. We set a price cap of $50, and we looked at 10 new knives, including the Victorinox Fibrox that we've always loved, a more supposedly consumer-friendly version that they've recently launched called the Swiss Classic, and 8 other knives. And we rounded up 6 testers. We got men, women, people with big hands, little hands, all different skill levels in the kitchen. And we gave them a ton of work to do. With each knife, they had to cut up a whole raw chicken, a butternut squash that's very heavy and hard. They had to dice onions, and they had to mince a whole big bunch of fresh parsley. And so they had to do each of these tasks 10 times with the 10 knives. And we looked at all of the results. We wanted a knife that really suited everyone, that could do this full range of tasks, which is what you really want your chef's knife to do. It's a workhorse. It's supposed to do everything in the kitchen. And I've got to tell you, most of these cheap knives, they tanked. They were not good. Now, some of them started out dull. They even got duller. They squashed the parsley. They sprayed onion juice everywhere. They made a mess out of the raw chicken. Using those knives made this work more of a chore than it already was. Some of these handles were uncomfortable for some of the people, some were uncomfortable for everyone, and if they got wet, they'd be slippery. The blades, some of them felt flimsy and weak when you were cutting a big butternut squash. Some of them felt really clunky. So guess what? At the end of all this testing, a real shocker. That Victorinox Fibrox blade, $27, it won again. This is a cheap factory-made knife. It's, you know, under $30. And we love the way it just cuts very smoothly and fluidly right out of the box. And it seems to keep its edge. So why does this knife keep winning? So we looked at the different parts. First, the blade. Now, all steel is not alike. It's an alloy. It's a combination of different elements. All steel includes iron and carbon, but then they can include other elements that give it certain properties like hardness or softness or more flexibility. Now, it turns out that the knives we liked in our lineup, the top knives, were all made of the same alloy, a very hard one. They stayed sharp, and they kept working for us. Then there's the cooking method. If you think of the steel as an ingredient, how did they prepare that steel? Even though a couple of the top knives had the same alloy, they weren't all the same when we went to use them in the kitchen. Steel is heated and it's cooled and it's tempered to develop certain properties. And what you want is a very fine grain to the metal. And that lets you sharpen it to a very, very thin edge. A larger grain will be too soft and crumbly. So our winner, the Victorinox Fibrox, has both things. It has a hard alloy and a very fine grain. Then we come to the handle. Lots of different hands love the way this thing feels. It's very grippy. It's got a nice rounded shape. It doesn't have any specific bulges or twists or turns that make you hold it a certain way. We talked to an ergonomics expert, and what they call this is affordance. That means it allows you to grab it the way you want to grab it. And even when you're the same person, as you're doing different tasks, you will grab this knife in different areas, and this knife allows you to do that really comfortably. And it doesn't slip when it gets greasy or wet. It always stays really comfortable and secure in your hand, so it does feel like that extension of your own hand. And actually, the handle was the reason we didn't like its own sibling, the Swiss Classic, which is supposed to be more consumer-friendly. It's got this ridge and kind of an ergonomic bulge that just wasn't comfortable for everyone. And it's a little more slippery and slick. We don't think that the Swiss Classic is worth it, and it costs more. So there you have it. Another round of testing, new competitors, but our champion is still the Victorinox Swiss Army Fibrox. $27, still the only chef's knife you'll need in your kitchen.
Patrick, do you have a particular kind of chef knife that you enjoy?
You know, I still actually even have some from my old Johnson & Wells days 20 years ago
that were part of the knife kit.
If you treat a knife well, it will treat you well.
Really? Okay. Now, because this is one thing I've always wondered about. Do you have, because, you know, sometimes if you get a set of knives, mm-hmm. there'll be a whole, but I find myself using some knives so much more than the others that I kind of wonder about that.
I almost always exclusively, for almost so many things, just use an 8-inch chef's knife. Mm-hmm. That's pretty standard. There's an 8-inch, there's a 12-inch. I think you get a little bit more control with 8-inch in your hand mm-hmm. than, and so it's just, you know.
And how do you sharpen said knife?
You know, I have got to where I will usually just, at this late, the last couple of years, I would use a steel, but I'll have them professionally sharpened.
There is somebody who does that around here?
Sometimes you'll find somebody that'll do this. Sometimes a different, somebody will come in town, so you can look around.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I've often had a hard time finding
a knife sharpener. I don't think there's anybody just specifically.
Who just sets up for that.
No,
so what do you do, just kind of keep?
You know, a lot of times there will be somebody that will come, you know, like for certain festivals and events.
Oh, I see.
I've even seen them like at gun shows.
Really? Yeah. Wow, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we do get, I think that's one of the things that adds to the joy of cooking is having equipment that you enjoy using or utensils mm-hmm. or products that make it easier for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, Patrick, I'm always glad to see you.
Yeah.
Thank you, friend, for being
fun.
With us. And so you're going to be at the big old Passport event
yes.
coming up Thursday, April 3rd from 5:30 to 8:30. If you just cannot get enough of international everythingness, then you do want to check out NATO Fest coming up
yes.
the 25th through the 27th, because there's going to be loads of opportunities. They're going to have a really, we'll talk about it later later in April, but they're going to have just great opportunities mm-hmm. this year that have not typically actually been part of NATO Fest, so I think that'll be fun as well. And, you know, when you think, particularly when it comes to Europe, of the degree to which this area has a connection with Europe,
yes.
It really is quite extraordinary. And so food trucks, you love the food trucks still,
oh,
yes?
Yeah. Yes,
and I just saw there's a new study out, has just come out actually, talking about food trucks and their impact, and there was great fear that the food trucks would dampen the brick and mortar mm-hmm. restaurants. As I understand it, the report finds that's not the case.
Well, you know, it's two different audiences. I understand that a brick and mortar restaurant puts a lot into that, has a huge
sure.
overhead. I understand their fear of anything happening to rock the apple cart there, but it's a very different audience. And a food truck also, the modern day food trucks, obviously not the
yes.
food trucks that would line up out of a shipyard
sure.
and just sell hot dogs. But really, as just to a certain, let's say international, a certain je ne sais quoi
yes.
to a region, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen for us beginning next month. We're going to have the food trucks back
yes.
here in the parking lot
I'm
at
so
WHRO,
excited about
which I'm
that.
Very excited about that. We do that in the warm weather months. And when I say we do that, what I mean is we started doing it last year. And so now we do it.
We do.
You know, that's what we do. It's how we roll, as they say. But we'll have the food trucks back out. Selected food trucks, different mm-hmm. ones every month. And it'll be loads of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So if you work over at Old Dominion or here in the WHRO area, if it doesn't take too long for you to get here, if you're in within a couple of miles, then you might want
to
journey on down for some lunch here. And so we will we'll be communicating those dates, but it'll begin in April. So that's when we'll mm-hmm. and we'll also post that on our Facebook
yes.
page as well. Patrick, thank you so much for being with us.
You.
It's always a pleasure. We'll look for
yes.
you at about.com and everywhere else that has anything to do with food in the Hampton Roads region. That is a fact. So do be on the lookout for our food truck schedule. That'll be coming to you next month. And in the meantime, we'll wish you a great afternoon, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow. Sugar.
Feeling too. I just can't believe it's true. Ah, sugar.